26th head football coach of this great institution. Ladies and gentlemen, our new head football coach, Mel Tucker.
Our team, we will be physical.
Wilkins again gives to Benjamin. Hit and drop to the backfield. Mustafa Johnson shooting through for Colorado.
Sometimes you just know. And I know that the young men in that room, they're hungry.
An interception thrown by Martinez. It's picked off by guess who? Nate Landman.
I've never been in a game, as a player or a coach, that we weren't expected to win.
Blitz from Nebraska. Montez takes a shot. Drops it in to Chanel. Touchdown.
Welcome back to episode 3 of the Shoulder to Shoulder podcast. We have just finished week 1 of college football season. The Buffs obviously are 1-0, unless you've been living under a rock. And this week is Nebraska week, so it's a big one coming up. Before we get into everything, just real quick, we're going to go ahead and start planning to do Tuesday releases for this podcast. So every Tuesday should be in your feed. Just for this one specifically, though, because of Labor Day and everything, going to be released on Wednesday just so I can get enough time to edit it out and everything. And then the only other thing is we do plan on starting a mailbag type of thing going forward. So the email for that is shouldertoshoulderpod@gmail.com. Just send an email with anything you want us to kind of talk about or go over, or anything you are curious about, and we'll kind of give our input/feedback on that. But other than that, we're all good to go. So I think we wanted to start off really with kind of what happened in the Pac-12 this week. So Chase, I'll just kind of let you get going with what your thoughts were on the Pac-12 for the beginning of the year.
Sure. All right. Well, basically Pac-12 started off, there were a few games that were kind of a big deal for the overall national perception of the league. And for the most part, they did pretty well. You know, Utah, the big guys, Utah, Washington, Stanford, USC, they all came out with a win. The only exception was Oregon losing to Auburn, which, you know, we can talk about a little bit. But, you know, I think just to pick a team that I would say impressed overall, you know, I think Utah pretty much showed what they're going to be. I know they struggled a little bit at the beginning with BYU, but they kind of showed what their defense is. You know, they really pushed them around. And I think that's kind of how they're going to win games. First game, you kind of assume that maybe the offense isn't quite as sharp or whatever, but their defense, I mean, they're pretty nasty. So I think they kind of showed that's the kind of game they're going to win. So I wouldn't be surprised if they win a lot of games for the rest of the year, just like that one.
Washington, for me, was kind of the team that impressed. I think Jacob Eason showed out really well. Obviously, they're playing a really lowly team in Eastern Washington, but, I mean, they won handily. It was never even a moment in doubt. I mean, even I think they played that game better than Utah played against BYU. There's just Jacob Eason just had a hell of a game, and I think he's, you know, going to improve that team just because they're not using Jacob Browning as the noodle arm quarterback. And he's, I think Jacob Eason is just way more talented. And with that defense that just always seems to be reloading, they're going to be extremely good. And I think especially with Oregon losing this week, I think they're the front runner to have any chance to go into the college football playoff from the Pac-12.
Right. Yeah. I mean, not to kind of overreact to any week one things happening, but Washington definitely seemed like just getting a guy in there who can actually sling the ball, you know, seems like it totally changes their whole offense. Which is kind of crazy to me that they had a guy that was there for 3 years, and his sophomore year, he was like a fringe Heisman contender, and now they're better now that they got a different someone else there. So we'll see how that goes. I mean, you know, other good quarterbacks showed up too. I mean, Washington State absolutely destroyed. Let's see, who was it that they were playing? Someone not important, but, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It was New Mexico State. That's who it was.
Okay, so New Mexico State, really bad team, granted, all things considered, but pretty much showed the same thing that we talked about earlier, where Mike Leach can just make any quarterback be ridiculous and put up insane numbers. So I guess that was impressive too. as far as things that were somewhat disappointing, I mean, I think we kind of talked about this before with Stanford, but they did beat Northwestern, so that was a positive. But I mean, I don't know, people who are listening who watch that game, I mean, it was what, 10-7 all the way up until
the
final play where they just happened to get a fumble recovered in the end zone to make it 17-7. So it wasn't convincing by any means.
No, not even a little bit.
So it didn't really convince me that Stanford is as good as some people thought. So I would say that was a little bit disappointing.
Mm-hmm. And I think for me, obviously, other than the Oregon loss, which again could be overreaction, you never know how the season's gonna kind of pan out. But I think USC really, obviously, they lost their. For those of you that didn't know, they lost their starting quarterback JT Daniels. It sounds like he tore his ACL and I believe his meniscus.
Yep.
So he's definitely done for the season. But they, I mean, considering that they brought in an air raid style offense, and that was kind of the thing that they thought would get them over the edge with Clay Helton still being the head coach of that team, they looked bad and their time management skills were absolutely horrible. They went for a fourth down on the 40-yard line of Fresno State that they did not need to do. They were up 8. I mean, they went for it on 4th-and-1 and that almost cost them the game. But fortunately for Clay Helton and the Trojans, they just kind of won based off of their sheer talent and the athleticism they had that Fresno State just doesn't have. So I think USC, and I didn't necessarily expect them to be an extremely good football team, especially with Clay Helton still as the head coach. But I mean, they just—it looks like it's going to be the same kind of thing where they underperform and they look like they have no idea what's going on as far as the schemes go. And I just think I wouldn't be surprised if by game six, you know, the USC has a tough stretch of games. I wouldn't be surprised if Clay Helton's gone and they've got an interim head coach in there.
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree. I mean, I think USC is definitely a disappointing one. I think, like, everyone wants them to be good so badly because it would help the conference out so much if USC became the team that they were at one time. But, I mean, JT Daniels was pretty kind of unconvincing as a quarterback for the most part as their starter. So to bring in his backup, I can't imagine that things are going to go very well for them. So,
right.
But you know, on the bright side, they are on the buff schedule. So
yeah. And if there's any year that CU's gotta beat USC, it's gotta be this year.
Yeah.
They just lost their QB. I never hope for like an injury or anything like that.
No, of course not.
But I mean, they don't have their QB, their starting QB. They already have a mediocre. No, he's not even. I think Clay Helton's the worst head coach in college football. they've got a bad coaching staff aside from their offensive coordinator. And I think that, especially because it's in Boulder, I think CU has to take advantage of it and win that game.
Yeah. So fingers crossed that one ends up helping them out. But it does seem like as time is going on, some of those teams, Stanford, USC, that people thought were going to be good. I mean, you know, Arizona, some people felt that they might be a good one too. I feel like those games are looking much more winnable kind of as this first round of games has come to a close.
Yeah. I think the Pac-12 South in particular, the division that CU's in, looks like it is completely up for grabs. Not necessarily the top spot. I think Utah's got that pretty much locked in right now.
Right.
But I think two through six in this division are completely wide open. I mean, UCLA looked bad against Cincinnati. Their offense was terrible. Arizona State looked all right, but they're also playing Kent State. They won 30-7.
Yeah, I mean, they looked good, but again, you know, it's kind of like Washington State. I mean, you just don't know what they're going to look like when they play serious competition.
Yeah, and like we said, Arizona already looked god awful in week one, and then
right.
USC with that coaching staff. I just think that, you know, if CU can get a couple of lucky breaks and they can get some momentum in this coming week and the next three weeks, then they've got a real shot of at least contending for like the second spot in this division, which I'm not saying that's what I think is going to happen, but I think it's realistic. And especially in year one of Mel Tucker, I think that'd be a really solid season to come off of.
Yeah, agreed.
So, you know, with the Pac-12, obviously we talked about a little bit about Oregon losing. The Pac-12 perception that it's a bad football conference, and it's kind of like the lesser of the Power Five. I think that kind of reigned true still through this week. I mean, Oregon lost to Auburn, especially with the way they lost. They should have won that game, but it was just poor game management by the Oregon coaching staff. And then UCLA lost to a group of five. You know, I don't think that there's anything that happened this week to change the perception that the Pac-12 is essentially garbage.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think the one game that everyone was looking at was Oregon and Auburn, and the way it started with them going out to that lead, I think they were up 21-6 at one point.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
It looked like, okay, here we go. Finally, they're going to get some recognition. They're not going to look bad. And then of course, yeah, the way that game ended, they stopped scoring and, let Auburn come back and win that thing. So I think that was really it. That was pretty much the game that would help the Pac-12. I don't know. Maybe if the Buffs beat Nebraska this week, maybe that'll boost the opinion, because people seem to be so high on Nebraska. So yeah. I don't know. Hoping for that.
Yeah. Other than CU and against Nebraska this week, the only other real shots that the conference has, I would say, is Arizona State next week against Michigan State. And then you've got UCLA against Oklahoma and Arizona against Texas Tech. I think both UCLA and Arizona are almost guaranteed losses.
Yeah, no chance.
But I mean, I think Arizona State has a chance. So really, those are essentially four games.
And those are the third week, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are next week, not this week. But right. So, I mean, really already there's only four more chances that the conference has to kind of right the ship. And I'm not very confident in really any of them except for Arizona State having a chance.
Right. Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. So, you know, hopefully CU can start to turn that, you know, narrative around starting this week. But before we get into the Nebraska game, we're kind of want to just go over a little bit of what happened in the Rocky Mountain Showdown. I know we were texting back and forth the entire game, and the first half was not pretty. And I guess if I'm being completely honest, I was slightly nervous actually at the end of the first half.
Yeah, I was definitely nervous. I mean, I was sitting there, my whole family's there, we're all watching this game, we sit down right before kickoff, you know, getting ready, getting excited to watch the Buffs tear it up against the Rams. And I mean, sure enough, they scored on their first drive, but man, it was pretty much ugly from there on out, mm-hmm. at least defensively for sure. So that was rough. But, you know, they pulled out the win, 52-31, so that's good.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like you said, the defense was just horrific to watch, especially in the first half. I mean, they didn't – I know for a fact that CU didn't force a punt until the fourth quarter. I think it was the fourth quarter.
Right.
And so they didn't stop the Rams' offense unless they got a turnover, which this game there was an abundance of them. But you can't really rely on turnovers to help you carry through games, because as much as you like to preach turnovers as a coach – a lot of it is like luck. You got to hope that, you know, somebody makes a bad throw or somebody just isn't careful with the football and they drop it. You know, it's just a lot of it is luck, no matter how much you preach it as a coach.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I would say that's true. I think they did a good job of making it count when the opportunity came, you know, but shout out Onu with those two picks. But it's true. I mean, one of them was thrown, hit the receiver kind of in the hands, granted in a tight window, bounced mm-hmm. around, and then he made this ridiculous sideline catch, you know.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff you can't count on. But I think for me, as far as the defense, it was sort of a tale of two halves. I mean, the first mm-hmm. half without the turnovers, it really felt like they were going to get scored on every time. So yeah,
it really did.
They could not keep up with some of those guys on the Rams offense. I mean, granted, Colin Hill looked better than I anticipated, even with all hype that was coming out from Rams camp, you know, but I think he showed that he's definitely capable. But the second half came around and it kind of seemed like they tightened it up a little bit. You know, there were still some issues, but nothing like the first half. I mean, I want to say it was their first touchdown. Delrick Abrams, you can see if you look back at that tape, he's standing over on the far side, jumping up and down, waving his arms because he's got two receivers in front of him and he's got no help. So clearly, you know, they just had some scheme stuff, some blown coverages that they've got to iron out. But I think that's to be expected with the new coach and the new style.
Especially with the defense that Tucker brings over. It's an extremely complicated defense. I think it's way more complicated and high level than McIntyre's 3-4. Just because, I mean, it's a Nick Saban kind of defense that he's running. And I think a big thing is he's been running it with four and five star athletes only his entire career.
Right.
I think CU has talented players, but I mean, it's just a different level of talent when you have guys that are five stars versus guys that are, you know, two, three, a couple, four stars here and there. But the athleticism factor, I think, is kind of huge. But also looked like maybe the team, especially defensively, was kind of in over their heads as far as just, they were just thinking too much. And that really slows you down as an athlete when you're trying to think through what exactly you're trying to do on each and every play. And I think it was pretty obvious, especially in the first half, that a lot of these guys were just thinking way too much and not just trusting their instincts, trusting what they knew and their fundamentals and just kind of going to where they thought the ball was going to be.
Right, yeah. I think there was definitely some of that first game. I don't know if you call it jitters or what, but basically, yeah, I think you're right. Like, they were kind of overthinking it. They seemed a little slow. Like, their decision-making was taking them a little longer to decide where to go and what to do. I know, like, Nate Landman in particular, a couple of times looked like he got caught out a little bit where, you know, he bit on the play action and then just couldn't catch up on the outside, covering the edge and stuff, so... but you know, I'd like to think it's stuff that they can figure out. I was a little bit worried about the fact that it didn't seem like they got a lot of pressure on Colin Hill for
not really any at all.
Yeah. I mean, definitely in the first half. And I don't know if that's because they're kind of not showing everything in this first game or if they really, cause I didn't feel like they even dialed up pressure all that much, to be completely honest.
I mean, yeah, I didn't have a chance to even rewatch this game, which I normally do. I just didn't have a chance this weekend. But I feel like when I'm thinking back on what I watched during the game, I didn't see any stunts on the defensive line. I didn't see any guys crossing through, and I didn't see any, you know, safety or linebacker blitzes. I'm sure there were a couple in there that I just missed off the top of my head, but it did not seem like they were pulling any at all.
Right. I mean, at least not in the first half. I know in the second half, the forced fumble touchdown that really kind of sealed it was Van Deese just making a perfectly timed blitz to the quarterback on that one. I mean, he just like absolutely, he just basically guessed when it was coming out and he just came flying in there. So that was good. You know, there were some signs, but, and I think they did turn around the second half. So I think that's where I would leave it on the defense is it seemed better. You know, they only allowed 10 points in the second half as opposed to 21 in the first. They forced a couple of turnovers that seemed a little bit more legit, you know, sack, fumble, not just kind of lucky tip balls. I think, and like you said, they had to punt at least once, I think, so that's good.
It was just the one.
So, I don't know. It seemed like at least they weren't getting gashed up and down the field, you know, in the second half. So, hopefully, I just want to see them, you know, keep that trend going into next week, that they improve as time goes on, you know.
Yeah, and I think really the main two things that were causing a ton of issues were contain on the edge. I think Nuamotu, Fowlo, and Carson Wells. I think Nuamotu did a better job of it than Carson, but Carson looked really lost. I mean, it didn't seem like he was sticking home at all. He wasn't holding his contain on the edge. And so anytime they ran that jet sweep or anytime they ran outside play, it was just kind of free territory for a while because they just weren't in position to make plays. And I don't remember seeing too much of Davion Taylor. So it seemed like the star package was not being used too much.
Right. Yeah.
And I think the biggest sign that there was not very much contained was that Delrick Abrams, the cornerback, was the second leading tackler, which just kind of goes to show that he was having to make a lot of plays where that should have been on Carson Wells or Fowlo.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, pretty much any time, let's see, what was his name? Dante Wright wanted to get to the outside, he pretty much could. So,
yeah.
I mean, that was pretty much it for the defense. But, you know, like I said, they looked like they were improving as the game went on. So Really hoping that they can really turn it around before Nebraska comes into Folsom next week.
Right. Yeah. And I think the only other thing I've got to mention is running backs were leaking out on just a little swing pass, or, you know, if they were just a safety option, both Landman and Wells both got kind of toasted on those quite a few times. So that's the only other thing I think they really got to focus on, is just contain and then getting the running backs in check on those leak plays.
Right. Right. Agreed.
Yeah. As far as, you know, specific players for CU that stood out, for me, one that stood out a lot was Jalen Sammy. He was a nose tackle. And it seemed like whenever he was in, the line held up pretty well in the middle, which is, I'm not ready to say necessarily he's going to be as good as Javier Edwards was last year, but I was a lot more confident in what the inside of the line, the interior, can do after what I saw this game. It seemed like whenever he was in, and he did come out quite a bit, I don't know if that was a conditioning or if they just wanted to get a rotation going, but whenever he was in, they were getting a solid hold on the line, and they weren't getting pushed back or anything like that.
Yeah, I think as far as the defense for, yeah, that I agree. Sammy seemed good. I mean, I think the both lines in the Rocky Mountain Showdown seemed solid. I think we talked about it earlier. You know, the line plays, kind of, we're not really sure what we've got until we go throughout the rest of the season. But you're right. I mean, Sammy looked good. I think as far as my like defensive standout, I would say, obviously, I mean, Onu with the two picks. Yeah. We talked about how some of that is luck, but I mean, the guy made two great plays on those balls where, I mean, toe tapping catches to keep those plays. And they were, you know, they were pretty huge for the momentum as far as saving that game. Cause like we said, they were cutting through the defense early on. So he was able to get those turnovers and kind of hold them off, thankfully.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he definitely stood out. And then on the offensive side of the ball, I mean, who else could you really pick other than Alex Fontenot?
Right, yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah, he finally gets his chance. He's been here 3 years now, and I don't know what the coaches saw last year specifically where they didn't feel comfortable really rotating him in. But, I mean, he showed a lot of burst when he would hit the hole, and then he was just kind of take off. And there were a couple runs where I thought he was going to get stood up, you know, 3-4 yards into the run, and he somehow just broke through. And then on two of his touchdown runs, they're both longer runs. Not, I mean, they're nothing huge, but they're both like 15-ish, 20-yard runs where he just hit the hole and he broke a tackle, or he stayed on his feet and kept driving, and he somehow popped through. And to me, I mean, him and Mangum both looked like they can be a really, really solid 1-2 punch, and I think that that's kind of going to ease a lot of the fears about a running back not being present in the offense.
Yeah, I mean, I think we kind of talked about it in our preview of the season, but the running back position looks like it's going to be a serious help, honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like it's going to be a strength for us between Fontenot and Mangum. I mean, not to overreact to week one, you know, but he looked really, really good. I mean, just the way he'd get hit, he's catching himself with one hand, continuing the run, you know, finishing off those touchdowns. Like, he just seemed like he was a hard guy to bring down. And I was excited to finally see that. I mean, yeah, so happy for that. Kind of carrying off of that, I would say the offensive line looked really, really good this week. I'd say if I was going to pick a standout, that, you know, that position group, I think, looked really good. Fontenot looked great, and I think part of that was because he had some big gaps to run through created by that line. Not to mention, you know, Montez didn't get sacked a single time, so that's always good. That always seems to help him. You know, he doesn't have happy feet in the pocket. So I was really, really impressed by that. And I think the overall rushing numbers, I think, kind of are a testament to how well they played. And, you know, granted, caveat to that, like we said before, it is CSU, so we don't really know what we're working with, but it's a really good place to start considering that was kind of one of the things we talked about last week being something that we wanted to see.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, like you said, I mean, Montez didn't get sacked once, which I think was a big sign going for next week. I think it's at least going to be better than what we saw last year against Nebraska, which is not hard to do, like we said before. But no. I mean, I think the run game looks like it's going to be pretty strong, and then pass protection, if they can kind of do something even similar to that, I think is going to be really solid. And I think we'll kind of get into, I don't think that Nebraska's pass rush is necessarily something to fear after what we saw this last weekend. But, you know, I mean, you never know how – maybe they just came out slow against the South Alabama team, but – ooh, they didn't look good.
No, they didn't. Yeah, and we'll get to that. We'll get to that soon. One more thing I wanted to say about the Buffs in general this week was just I kind of think that they probably didn't show everything that they had. So
right.
I'm interested to see, especially with the offense, what other things they're going to throw out. I mean, I know it kind of seemed to me like, okay, we need this third down, so let's run one of these LaVisca plays that we have in our back pocket, you know, and then he'll mm-hmm. run a jet sweep and pick up 20 yards or whatever it is. So
yeah,
I'll be interested to see how they use that. And they did use the tight end some, like everyone was talking about before the season started. So that was mm-hmm. cool to see. And I wouldn't be surprised if they do a little bit more of that. But, you know, first touchdown of the year was caught by a tight end, and I don't think that was by accident. So
no, I don't think it was either.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think one of the things that really popped out to me is I think that Jay Johnson, the offensive coordinator, is going to use the middle of the field a lot, but we really only saw maybe two or three balls go down the middle of the field. And I, like you said, I think that was intentional. They don't want to give it away because the last however 5 years, we didn't use the middle of the field at all in the passing game. So I think he kind of wanted to reserve that as much as he could so that when Nebraska takes a look at film, they think it's just like last year. They're not going to worry about the middle of the field. Let's focus on the hashes and out. And so I think that's going to be something that we see a little bit more of in this game coming up.
Agreed.
Yeah. Yeah. So other than that, you know, I think one thing that maybe we're discounting a little bit is that Colorado State's maybe a little bit better than they're projected to be. I don't think that's like a huge like caveat or anything, but I think their offense is actually going to be somewhat decent in the Mountain West. Obviously their defense isn't going to be anything special, but that maybe the offense is going to be a little bit better than people thought.
Yeah, I mean, I think their projections had them at like 3.5 wins or something, so it's not saying a lot that they're better than expected, but I do think that especially, yeah, like we were talking about earlier, Colin Hill kind of showed that he is ready to play at this level, you know, so I think their offense could help them steal some games for sure. Who knows about the defense, you know, but it seemed like they definitely put up way more of a fight than they had than they did last year. So they looked better than I thought they were going to be. I'll say that much.
Yeah, I think Colin Hill, for the most part, he was pretty accurate, which I thought one of the bigger complaints about him was his accuracy, and I didn't really see much of that, and I don't know how much of that was just our scheme or our guys not knowing the scheme as well as they should have at that point, and guys getting beat in one-on-one coverage or like you said, when Delrick Abrams was trying to cover two receivers at once, and he just got beat because he was covering two guys, which is not really his fault at all. So
right.
you never know. I mean, maybe I could see CSU winning a bunch of shootout style games in the Mountain West. I think that their offense should be decent enough that they could win some shootout games in the Mountain West. Like, I mean, if I could go back and put some money down on their 3.5 wins, I'd probably take the over. That'd be very cautious, like a 4, maybe 5 wins. I don't think they're going to get to a bowl or anything, but I think 4 wins is doable with the offense. I think Bobo's a good enough play caller that he can get him there.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see how they look going forward. You know, first week, you never really know what you're going to see, but I was relatively impressed. We'll say that.
Yeah, I agree with you there. So to get into what this one's really focused, this podcast is really focused on for this week is the Nebraska Cornhuskers coming into Boulder on Saturday at 1:30. It's a nationally televised game. So, I mean, just like last year, anybody that wants to see an old school rivalry is going to see it. And I think it's going to be an extremely good game. I don't think it's going to be a blowout like a lot of, you know, obviously a lot of these blowout predictions are coming from Nebraska fans. But I think there were some people that were in the media that just thought that this game wasn't going to be close at all. But I think after the way both teams played in week one, I think this one's going to be a really good game to watch. I'm excited to be there. I'm going to be nervous the entire time, I'm sure of that. But
of course.
It's going to be a fun game. I mean, Vegas responded by the line for this game was Nebraska. It came out this week. It was updated to 6.5. and I'm no sharp bettor, which for those of you who don't know what sharp betting means in sports, it's essentially someone who comes in with a ton of money, throws down on the opposite of what Vegas is expecting, and it kind of moves the line one way or another. So I think the sharps came in, the line moved from 6.5. When I got in, it was a 4.5, and I still took that. But I have no idea what it's at now. It could even be lower, but I think it's kind of getting towards that point where it's going to be like a field goal-ish spread, which is pretty much a toss-up at that point.
Right, yeah. I mean, basically what all of that means is just that this game is supposed to be closer than people originally thought. So I don't know how much of that is the Buffs looked pretty good and how much of that is Nebraska didn't look very good. But we'll get into that here in a second.
Yeah. I mean, I guess just to go right into it, Nebraska played South Alabama, a directional school, which they play in the Sun Belt Conference. So they're definitely a very, very low level team. To be fair to them, though, they do come from the same conference that Troy comes from, who actually beat Nebraska last year. But I think South Alabama was projected to finish last in the Sun Belt. Dead last. They're supposed to be the worst team there, and they came in, and for a while, I mean, I think for most of the game, everybody in Lincoln was pretty nervous, which is not something you want to see when you're, you know, going into year two of Scott Frost and you got a rivalry game coming up the next week.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely saw a lot more negative from the Big Red Twitter coming out this last week, or this last for their game. I was expecting them to just absolutely roll over this team. You know, Martinez is going to have like 500 total yards or something absolutely obscene and just absolutely wreck them. And Nebraska fans are going to be going crazy about like, oh, our offense is unstoppable and all this stuff. I was expecting to have to address that. I was not expecting to have to talk about how their offense, in the words of their own coach, was anemic. And that they had a relatively closer than the score, I'm going to say, 35-21 win.
I mean, well, if you take away from both sides the defensive and special teams touchdowns, the game is a 14-14 game. I mean, if you take away South Alabama's points from defensive special teams and then the same from Nebraska, it's a tie game, which is not a good sign when you're playing somebody like South Alabama.
No, I mean, look, last year when the Buffs played Nebraska, it really looked like Martinez is going to tear him open every time down the field, kind of for parts of that game. I mean, he was running all over the place. And in this game, he had 6 yards on 13 carries, which I think is very interesting. And he also had 178 yards and an interception passing. So his numbers were not impressive by any means against a team that I can't imagine they were throwing that much at him that he's, you know, he hasn't seen before or he's not ready for. So that seemed surprising to me for sure. I like I said, when your coach says, your coach who's supposed to be super offensive minded said it's like one of the worst efforts he's ever seen on offense, you know, you got to fix something there.
Right. I mean, and the thing that kind of really, really shocked me, because I mean, everyone's been talking about how since he got there to Nebraska, how Adrian Martinez is this really mature guy for somebody that's 18, 19 years old. But even the announcers in this game kind of mentioned it. And I mentioned it too, when I was talking to some people about this game, his body language looked off, and I don't know what exactly it was. It just seemed like he wasn't fully present for the game. And I don't know if he was just, you know, overlooking a team that is marginally less talented than Nebraska, but maybe marginally is not the right word there. I mean, they're immensely less talented than Nebraska, and he just did not look like he was all in on that game. And I think that was kind of shocking to me, because this, especially when the announcer said it too, I knew I wasn't just kind of making this up in my own head.
Right. Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think the most shocking thing to me about it is that we're kind of talking about this game in an opposite way of what we thought, you know, because the defense did, they had what, 14 of their points?
14, and they had a punt return for a touchdown. Right. So 21 on D and special teams combined.
Right. So their defense looked pretty good. I mean, that probably shouldn't mean anything considering the opponent. But it was interesting that what everyone thought would be the problem for them is their defense. They thought they'd be winning a lot of shootouts because of their offense being so good. So I think that's what's the most shocking to me is just – this team is kind of backwards right now. So
yeah,
we'll see.
They're exactly backwards from what everybody thought they would be.
Right. So,
yeah. And I know throughout the game, afterwards on Twitter and everything, everyone was talking about how Wandale Robinson, who's I don't even know what necessarily, he's basically a utility player. He plays wide receiver, running back. They run him on a lot of jet sweeps and they pretty much move him everywhere because he's a little guy. He's like 5'8", but he's quick as hell and he's shifty. And everyone was saying how he had such a great game. But I mean, looking at his stats, he had 21 yards rushing on 4 attempts. So, I mean, he did have a five yard average, which is it's pretty solid, but then he had 3 receptions for 33 yards. I mean, these aren't crazy outlandish numbers for somebody that everybody in Nebraska world is praising for having such a great game.
Yeah, I think that obviously there's a lot of hype going on there. You know, they want to have something to look at that was nice, mm-hmm. I think is part of that. But I don't know, you know, we'll see how he does for the rest of the season, see if he kind of lives up to their expectations or not.
Yeah. So, I mean, when we were initially thinking about, you know, who we're wanting to look out for this game, he was going to be one of the people I pegged to watch out for, but it seems like he's not even, I mean, I think he's their best threat right now because I think they're missing Morgan Stanley a lot more than Morgan Stanley was a receiver in Nebraska last year. And he graduated, either graduated left or I can't remember, but I think they're missing him as a receiver a lot more than they thought they would. And that kind of means that they're not a one-dimensional offense by any means, but they can't use him as a weapon when they're running read options with Martinez all game either. So it's kind of like they're moving more towards a run-heavy offense when they need to have more of a balance to be successful.
Right, yeah. I mean, look, I think if we're going to kind of talk about what kind of matchups or players that we're looking out for this game, mm-hmm. I still think you got to be worried about Martinez. I mean, I know mm-hmm. he had a bad game, but I feel like this offense kind of lives and dies with him. So
right.
He's still kind of the guy I would look out for. I know, like you were talking about, you know, I'm with you looking at Robinson. I think you're right. Like, he was this guy that they were really looking at, and he could still be a weapon, but I think whether or not he's going to be a weapon is going to be based on Martinez and how well he actually plays, how consistent he can be.
Mm-hmm. It kind of just goes back to what the big complaints about the CU defensive performance in the last game was just contain. I mean, if you can stay home and contain Martinez when he tries to break that outside, because I mean, when he runs that read option, he's either given to the running back and he's going to go off guard, off tackle, you know, somewhere in the center of the line, or he's going to take it himself, and 95% of the time he's going to try and swing that outside. If you just keep your contain, I think Carson Wells and Fallow or Davion Taylor in that situation are athletic enough to keep him in check. So that's kind of really, I think that's what's going to be the big decider here, is how well the coaches at CU can get these guys to stay focused on keeping that contain. Because if they can't keep that contain, then, I mean, he's going to break Khalil Tate's record for rushing yards by a quarterback, and we're going to be feeling that one for years to come. So that's exactly kind of the main thing here.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, it pretty much just goes back to they're going to have to iron out some of those issues that they had before. That they had in this game this last week. If they don't kind of get the scheme figured out and get quicker on their feet, you know, get those decisions made faster, then they're definitely going to have problems. But if they can, I mean, I definitely feel like they have the athletes necessary to keep up with him and kind of keep him contained and keep him in that pocket. Because I think what Southern Alabama showed is that if he can't get out and he can't run, you know, I mean, he mm-hmm. has less than a yard per carry, then I think it's going to be hard for him.
Yeah. I mean, he's like you said, they live and die through him. And the thing that really shocked me, he's never going to be, you know, a Trevor Lawrence from Clemson kind of passer, but he was a pretty consistent, solid passer last year, and he did not have that look. I mean, he was missing throws that he should hit 9 times out of 10 that were kind of drive killers in a lot of sense. So that's something that I don't know, like I said, if that was just like he wasn't mentally into that game or maybe – and this is one thing that the announcers mentioned as well is they thought that last year maybe he was kind of going on a first read. He was going to his first read in the passing game, and it seemed to work out for him because, you know, that offense is so hard to scheme against. And now people start to kind of figure it out now that they've seen a year's worth of tape for him in the Big Ten, and they're making him go to a second read. And that's where I think he's starting to struggle is he's still only 19 years old, 19, 20 years old. He's a sophomore. He's probably having a little bit of trouble going through his progressions like a junior or senior quarterback should at this point.
Yeah, I would agree. I think, you know, he's going to get better as time goes on. Absolutely. I mean, you're right. He's still young, but yeah, I think that's kind of what the Buffs need to capitalize on is kind of keeping up with what these defenses are doing to him and kind of following the lead of you just keep him contained and you make him think that his only option is to pass that ball and you're going to have a better day.
Yeah, if you turn this team into a one-dimensional team where they have to pass the ball because I think their line, especially because in the first half, they, for anyone that wasn't watching, they had their center in and his snaps to Martinez were high, low. I mean, they're going everywhere. Right, at one point, he shot one over his head that I can't remember if it was actually a turnover that happened there, but they benched him at the end of the first half. They got their backup center in, and his snaps were better, but the line as a whole just looked off. And I think that's a large part because offensive line as a whole, it's such a unit-based group that you need to have everybody on the same page, and if one guy's kind of out of sync, it throws the rest of the group off.
Right, agreed. I mean, I think I can't imagine that they're gonna have that kind of problem all the time. I mean, I don't know if that's like first game of the year issues with snaps and stuff like that, but it's true. I think with a young quarterback, you know, they need that stuff to be on point. I mean, I think you can't have that issue because it's only going to make it harder for him. And if they do have those issues, that's something that the Buffs this next week can hopefully capitalize on.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, if they can, like I said, if they can just focus on keeping that contained and then making Nebraska kind of start to look more towards the pass, I think that's going to be the key to success for winning this game because I don't think he's at that level of a quarterback mentally where he can just completely take over as a passer and run through his progressions and just dominate in the passing game. I don't think he's quite there yet. I'm not saying he won't be, but I think right now that's kind of the key for CU to win this game is force them into passing the ball as much as possible. I think you've got a really good shot to win the game.
Agreed. So speaking of winning the game, what would you say needs to happen for the Buffs to win this one?
Yeah. I probably sound like a broken record, but containing Martinez on the outside, like you've got to hold the edge. If you don't hold the edge, I have no faith in the Buffs winning the game if they can't hold the edge. I think that as long as they can do that, that's going to be huge. And then I think, you know, offensively, they just have to, I think they got to open up the playbook. There's no reason to hold back anything in this game. I think this is going to be a close enough game where you got to pull everything out and use the middle of the field. In the passing game, if they can use the middle of the field, get Dimitri Stanley. I mean, he had a great catch on a slant in the CSU game, but that was like the only one I saw. You got to do something with the middle of the field, and that's going to open up everything. Because I think a lot of people are kind of, you know, like what happened to LaVisca? You only had 3 catches. Yeah, he had that great touchdown catch, but he only had 3 catches. But what I noticed when I watched a little bit back of the game is Colorado State was their bracket coveraging on him, which I mean, they had a cornerback on him and then they had a safety over the top to cover anything deep. And then they're running zone with the rest of the defense. So essentially, you know, most of the time there were 3 guys watching just LaVisca, which it's really hard for somebody to make any play when you've got that many guys covering you. But that's why Tony Brown, Katie Nixon, and, you know, the tight ends had such good games because they were so focused on stopping LaVisca that the other guys were completely open to make plays. And so I think, you know, using the middle of the field is going to open up things for LaVisca, which is another key for CU winning the game, is getting him involved on the edge and deep, and then using those inside game passing to kind of open up the field.
Right. All right. Agreed. I think the only other thing I would add in there is just you want to keep that O-line playing well. I mean, they had a good showing this first week, and if they can have another good one where Montez stays clean for the most part and they're opening up running lanes, you know, that offense is going to hum just like it did this last week. So making sure that the offensive line play is solid. Also the fact that if that stays solid, you know, it keeps that decision-making being good. The Buffs didn't have any turnovers in their last game. I definitely think that their offense is going to carry them this year. I think we would both agree on that. So
yeah, we definitely would.
As the more they can limit turnovers and some of those mental errors, you know, the better. So keep that offensive line strong, keep making those good decisions like they did this last week, and I think a win is definitely possible.
Yeah, and kind of just to add on to the, you know, keeping the ball safe and not turning it over, there were a couple times where Montez threw a ball that I think should have been picked off, but it was just, I don't think CSU, I don't think their defense is good enough, but I think a team like Nebraska that has better athletes can definitely take advantage of that. So I think Montez, you know, he showed some flashes of brilliance like he always has, and then he just made some throws where you just kind of like, you know, lean back, scratch your head, and you're like, well, what the hell is he just thinking there? And so I think that's another concern, and also something that needs to happen is he needs to not make dumb decisions, needs to be safe with the ball. And he's typically over his time as a CU quarterback done pretty well in keeping the ball protected. But I think, you know, I think this game is going to come down to turnovers and, you know, potentially who gets the ball last.
Agreed. I think that's definitely possible. This game could be real tight, and I think it's going to be one that we're all going to be sweating out.
Yeah, I think it's just going to be just like last year in Lincoln. The thing that makes me pretty confident is I think, you know, last year's team was, and this is obviously going off one game, so I'm probably not qualified to be saying this, but I think this year's coaching staff is just a better all-around coaching staff than last year's in terms of scheme and X's and O's. And I think that last year's coaching staff was able to go into Lincoln and win this game. And now Nebraska's coming to Boulder. It's going to be, I'm almost positive it's going to be a sold out game. I don't think it's going to be, you know, 30,000 Husker fans, like a bunch of idiots on Twitter are saying, but it's going to be a packed crowd. It's going to be an extremely electric atmosphere. And I think that, you know, if you just play to your strengths, I think that the Buffs have a good shot just because it's in Boulder. And I think that now, you know, Nebraska has kind of shown that they're not as great as everyone thinks they're supposed to be.
Right. Yeah. I'm hoping that Folsom is absolutely packed to the brim with a vast majority CU. You know, that's the hope. Yep. I can't imagine that Nebraska could fill that thing as much as some people are saying. So hoping that stadium is rocking for sure for the Buffs to pull out a win here.
Yeah, and I know I wasn't alone on this. I know I bought, or not, well, I did, I guess I did. My family and I bought 12 extra tickets on top of the ones we have. And I know I just sold them at cost to anyone that wanted them as long as they're a Buffs fan. So I think a lot of people did something similar to that.
Right.
And so I think that alone is going to be helping out with keeping, you know, keeping the red out as they use for their slogan.
Right.
So for this game, what are you predicting is going to be the outcome? What do you think, you know, what do you think is going to happen come Saturday, 5 p.m.?
I am going to go with I don't know, points are always hard, but 35-31 Buffs is what I'm going to go with. I cannot bear to pick the Cornhuskers. Excuse me.
Yeah.
to win this game, and I honestly believe that the Buffs have a great shot at taking this one. I know after that first week, if Nebraska comes in here looking like they did in that first week, I think the Buffs should win without too much of a problem. I don't think they will look that bad. I think Nebraska is going to come in ready for this game. I think, you know, they've kind of had it circled the same way we have, so I think it's going to be a tight one within a touchdown. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, and I was kind of thinking the exact same thing. But like you said, if they come in playing like they did against South Alabama, I think this one's going to be a relatively easy win for the Buffs, but again, I don't think that's going to happen. I think they're going to come out more focused, more prepared. I think the offense is going to do a lot better than they did. I was thinking a little bit more of a high scoring game. I think the over was set at like 62.5. I'm definitely taking that the over, but I think it's probably going to be somewhere around like a 45-42, maybe 45-38, but I'm also taking the Buffs to win this one. It's in Boulder. You know, I think they just showed after week one that they came a little bit more prepared, at least offensively. And I think that's what's going to be the difference in the game.
All right. Go Buffs.
So we both got them winning. And then before we get into the tweet of the week, I think just real quick, the games we wanted to touch on for other Pac-12 games to watch, if you wanted to keep something on your guide. I think one for me that I'm going to want to watch is Washington and Cal. Not because I think Cal has a chance of winning, but both of those defenses are extremely, extremely hard-nosed, and they don't give up points very easily. So I know most people hate it, but I love watching games that are like 9-6
or, you know, 12-9. You might be the only one.
Yeah, I love watching those games, and I think that's just my dad got the whole hard-nosed defense instilled in me kind of attitude. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how that looks. Cal didn't look great in this last week's game, but that one, and then the other one I want to see is Stanford and USC, which I thought was odd they're playing in week two, but I think that'll be a good barometer of where both teams stand. I think USC needs to show that they can score against a team that's, I mean, from what we saw the first week, got a stingy defense, and I think Stanford needs to show whether or not they can beat a team that I think that they're going to be better coached. They're going to be a better coached team. I think they're going to have a better scheme, so that'll be kind of one that I want to keep my eye on.
You know, I had those exact two games as well for games to watch. I think Washington, Cal is going to be great. I'm excited to see what Eason can do versus, like, statistically what's supposed to be one of the best defenses in college football, actually, in Cal. So that'll be interesting to see what he looks like, because I feel like if he could throw it well against them, then, I mean, that's a good sign that Washington's going to be able to cruise against just about anybody. And then, yeah, Stanford, USC, you know, USC lost their starting quarterback. What's their backup going to show? Can they recover from it? I still don't really think Stanford is actually that good. So
I don't either.
if they can, you know, give everyone something to see, if they can have a good win against USC, you know, maybe that'll change people's minds. But those are the two games that I was going to say to watch. Really, I think Nebraska-Colorado is kind of the marquee game of this week. So looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think everybody that just likes college football in general, or especially those that like the Pac-12, is going to want to keep their eyes glued to the screen for this Nebraska-Colorado game. It's primetime, 1:30 on Fox. I think it's going to be – I mean, I know last year's game was, I want to say, the most viewed game that week. But I don't know if that's true or not. I know it was extremely heavily watched. So I think it's going to be the exact same thing. Like you said, it's the marquee matchup for this week. So I'm just excited for it. And I know it's already Monday night when we're recording. So I'm just pumped for it to be Saturday.
Yep. Can't wait.
Yep. So, for tweet of the week, Chase, I think, I'm sure you probably had one that you figured out. If not, I've got a couple.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and throw yours out?
All right, so this one, it's a little bit cheesy, but for those of you who, I think most people would know who this is, but this is Roger Sherman. He is verified. I don't know exactly what from. I'm probably just blanking, but he's at Roger, R-O-D-G-E-R. He said, it's official. Say, hey, what's up, hello, to the first Fetty Whopping of the 2019 college football season. And that was Kentucky beating Toledo in the fourth quarter. So, I mean, it wasn't even like a big beatdown, but the fact that he used Fetty Whopping. It was probably the funniest thing I read on Twitter that night.
All right. Well, we're going to have to incorporate that into our analysis from now on, I think.
Every time that someone gives a beatdown, it's going to be a Fetty Whopping going forward.
Fetty Whopping. All right.
Yeah, and then honorable mention, this is just a regular fan. He wasn't a very, very highly followed guy, but it's at Greg Butcher _, And he tweeted out, I'm officially entering the college football fan transfer portal. Oh,
yes.
This has been a tough time. Please respect my decision. And he put in a notes read that said, after a lot of thought and prayer, I officially am entering the transfer portal. The decision to leave Tennessee fanhood does not come easy, as I've been committed to this university for a long time. I want to thank the fellow fans who have given their all as well. My recruitment is wide open, and I have listed my top 10 in no particular order. Respect my decision.
Yeah, for those of you that don't know, Tennessee lost this weekend to Georgia State.
That sounds right. That sounds right.
Okay, I mean, you can tell by the inflection of my voice that it was literally nobody that they lost to, an SEC team. So that was actually one of the best things that I saw this weekend, probably, was that guy putting out that he is in the fan transfer portal. And he put out like an actual, like, just like what the players did, with like a picture and all the different school emblems and everything like that. Yep. All around him. People were like recruiting him on the Twitter posts. Like, oh man, I don't know. It's good stuff. It's good stuff.
Yeah, it was a great tweet. You got to give props out to Greg Butcher underscore, at Greg Butcher underscore, and that's B-U-T-C-H-E-R. So go give that guy a follow if you want to hear. I have no idea if he's going to be funny ever again, no. But that one was funny. No.
Way to go, Greg. Good job.
All right, so real quick before we wrap up, just a reminder, if you want to send anything for the mailbag, it's shoulder to shoulder pod at gmail.com, and that's shoulder pod at gmail.com. So send that in, we'll open those up. I'm assuming we won't have many to get to going into next week, so we'll probably get them all answered. Sign it however you want, we'll read off your name or whatever you want us to read off as, and we'll kind of give our feedback on that. But otherwise, looking forward to Saturday. Huck the Fuskers. Let's go Buffs.
Yeah. Thank you for listening, and Sco Buffs, as always.